It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Evan Giddings alongside Dan Devonia with you. We got, dude, I'm telling you, Dan, we got an entire packed six-hour day on 95.7 The Game because it's not just us.
Dude, I'm contracted for three. What are you talking about?
It's not just New Jersey Ken. It's not just Killa Cam in the back. It is also our very own Joe Spadoni, Sam Lubman, and then Matt Steinmetz coming up later on today from 12 to 3 from Freeman's Appliance out there in Concord. So we got locked and loaded coverage all day here on The Game, as we do every single Saturday. So you're going to catch myself along with Dan from 9 to noon, and then Spadoni along with Lubman and Steiny out there at Freeman's Appliance. So look, we got a show loaded for you, Dan. And first of all, it's always funny because we see each other like once a week. You're often running out in the back east. I don't know where you're at, if you're overseas, if you're in New York City, if you're in the Presidio. You miss the beautiful weather today. You missed the beautiful weather yesterday. And really this whole week, what have you been up to?
Yeah, just out in New York for a little bit. Let me just tell you, first of all, it's great that those guys are doing, as we like to say in the industry, a remote. Because that's the one thing that I would never sign up for in all my days of broadcasting.
A remote?
The studio is where I want to be. The controlled environment, the controlled climate. I remember when I was doing post-game NFL shows, and I'd always be in my, I'd have my glass of water, I'd be in the studio, it'd be a pleasant, whatever, 68 degrees, whatever temperature we want to set it at. You know, and I got all my producers, and then I'd say, now let's go out to Chicago and check in with our my reporter. It's Brett Ringenbaugh standing by. Tell us about that game between, you know, the Bears and the Vikings in sub 20 degree weather as you sit there with your Elmer Fudd hat on covering every orifice of your body. How is it out there? Because it's toasty here in the studio.
Sorry. No. Did you ever have any, I don't know, experiences where the guy was just clearly just pissed, did not want to be there whatsoever, and you just kind of needle him a little bit? Like, I remember, there was one famous telecast where these two reporters, the anchor and the reporter, were just, it almost looked like they wanted to fight each other. Like, they were so mad at being out there, one being in the studio, one being the boss, one being the guy that was taking directions. It was like they're about to come to blows.
Yeah, so I didn't take someone's job, but there was a guy who was in a market who had been there for a long time.
You can say it.
Very popular, and he wanted the job as the number one. I was the number one. He was the number two. So as the number two, he was the reporter who was in the field, and I tossed to him once. And he was with some other players, and he was just sort of tongue-in-cheek, trying to be, you know, trying to interject some humor. And he said, and he turned to Matt Hasselbeck, I think it was the quarterback at the time, saying, hey, Dan thinks that you guys could have played a little bit better. Got any response? Which isn't what I said. And so they were sort of ganging. It was just after games. So Hasselblad, well, tell Dan that he's got it wrong. And they were serious. And he was sort of feeding this narrative like, Dan doesn't know what he's talking about. You hear what he said? I was trying to maintain a smile, but if I could reach through that tube and grab this 58-year-old man by his necktie and pull him through the lens, I would have. Tore him a new poo-poo. But, you know, sometimes you gotta keep that stuff under wraps. You know, the other thing that happens from time to time where you just really, and I learned this the hard way, is when you do a remote, and let's just say, you know, the Giants have just won the pennant. Let's go out live to Evan Giddings. Evan, tell us about what's going on down there. And you're with the fans, or you're outside of the stadium, and there's people around. You want to capture that emotion. The minute that light goes on, it's going to be pandemonium. Where people see a television light, they're in this euphoric state. They're just going to start going nuts. They're going to want to get in front of the camera, and you're trying to do this live shot, and it goes from this really fun time to where you're pushing people out of the way and like, get the hell out of here. And the minute the people see that look on your face, like you're pissed off at the people during what is supposed to be a fun time, is also really problematic. So things to think about, young man, as you go forward.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, because on Thursday at the Coliseum, it was a day game, and there was 48,000 people, whatever. And so the halls were just, you know, gills, packed to the gills, elbow to elbow, and there was this one little stretch where it's basically it. I mean, it was almost like the divide in Oakland, where you come into the city, everyone gets filtered into this one toll bridge, and everyone's just sitting there kind of waddling through each other, because there was food lines on one side, and then there was a guy trying to do a live hit on the other side, and everyone was pissed at this guy because nobody could get through, and he kept messing up. He was trying to do a recorded hit or something. I don't know. So I'm watching this guy, and he's working for some Spanish speaking station, and he's doing this hit over and over and over.
TV or radio?
TV.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. He has a cameraman with him, and he's trying to do this stand up, and you could tell it's a recording. He's not on air. He's not live, because he just keeps going. All right. One more, one more, one more, one more. And so at first I felt bad for the guy, because he clearly couldn't figure it out. And then this big old guy with a bottle of beer just walks on by and like gives him a hip check and says, "Hey, finish up and get out of here. We got people coming through." It was like an hour before the game. It felt terrible for this guy. So, yeah, no, you're right. It's not going to be one of those remotes today at Freedman's Appliance with Joe Spadoni and Sam Lubman. That's how we got on this. That's how we got on this. Not one of those remotes. But, oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's going to be a little less testing.
And the other thing you've got to learn is that as you go forward, you're going to be doing some television. Always find out when that Star Spangled Banner hits. Because I got stuck with that in Fresno once out at Celent Arena. They're like, all right, Dan, we're going to have you go, because it's you do things according to your news slot. Like, sports is going to hit at about 6:25. We're going to go to you at 6:27 for the live shot. Well, that Star Spangled Banner hits, and obviously if you're in an indoor arena, you could hear a pin drop, and I'm the only banana that's talking. And there were boos, and Fresno has a tendency to hug the flag. They're a little bit conservative in the valley out there, and you got some...
God, they love America.
Well, yeah, and then you got some Hawaiian-Italian dude who's just blowing, reading the script right through, you know, Old Glory. And you got some of those old farmers who didn't like that, man, and I had to apologize. Like every show the next day, the morning show, the afternoon show, and both of my evening shows, I had to say, well, nobody's more American than me, and I want to apologize to the people of the Central Valley. Meanwhile, I was like, come on, man, it ain't on me. I'm right out of college. Put it on my producer.
Well, we always go behind the scenes, and so Cam Williams is going to be our executive producer for the Warriors this season, and so he's going to have to deal with this, because one thing when you're working behind the scenes, Cam, and you are the producer, just speaking from the play-by-play perspective, you have your segments, you're going up until pregame, you always try and wrap so that the commercial fills the anthem. But, of course, you never know. Sometimes the anthem is a little bit early. Sometimes it's a little late. Sometimes you got Fergie going 2.5 minutes. Sometimes it's 30 seconds. They're just in the route, and it's just right to the game. But as a play-by-play guy, the one thing that is always frustrating is when it comes back right in the middle of the anthem, and they dial it up, and you know, you catch the last 30 seconds. But even if you go too long the segment before, the moment you start going into your out, and you hear that, like, everybody that's listening is just pissed that you're even talking at this point.
You gotta lay out, right? Just lay
out.
Yeah,
just get out of there. And we'll be right back for the starting tip on 95.7 The Game. And just go. But You but your producer has to time it out for you. And so sometimes...
Ken, you taking notes back there?
Sometimes you just don't have any control over those things, and you end up looking like, well, and feeling like a jackass.
No, the Star Spangled Banner is, it's a big deal. Especially when it comes to what it is that we do. Like, that all has to be pre-planned and timed out. So, Cam, there you go. As a heads up, man, we're 10 minutes into the show. Look at this.
And look, we're going to get into some Warriors. They got training camp coming up this week. I know the Niners have a,
You asked me about what New York. You know what, New York, now that I think about it, you know what's missing in these parts? We all want to get there.
The sun?
The playoffs and the sun. But there is some, I forgot about this. So I'm sure, you know, everybody in these parts, there's nothing like postseason baseball. Like, yeah, postseason NBA, yes, exciting. 49ers get to a wild card or a divisional playoff, always exciting. There's something about baseball, a little bite in the air. And being in New York, you just forget just how exciting that is. And the energy becomes palpable with both New York teams. The Mets, my God, Jersey Ken, hanging on for dear life with those bravados going right down to the nub.
Let's just be patient, people. Let's just be patient.
By the way, New York right now claiming the two best and most exciting shortstop in baseball, which I think we both agree.
No, we don't.
Starting with the New York Yankees with Danny Volpe. Yes, I will claim any Pacific Islander half Italian becomes an honorary member of the Devone family. So Danny Volpe. And then, of course, the Metropolitans with Baby Acuna, baby.
Oh, you mean Lindor?
Oh, wait, where's Baby Acuna?
Well, no, so Acuna came in when Lindor got a little banged up, but yeah.
Okay.
So
Baby Acuna's the thing.
Yeah, four home runs in his first four games. can't complain about that.
See, but this is the thing that I think a lot of West Coasters struggle with. No one knows who the hell Baby Acuna is out here. You got to introduce the people.
What is going on here?
I just found out about him. By the way, how many Hawaiian Italians have you met in your life? Is that why anyone that you find, whether they're in sports,
an Italian,
whether they're an opera singer, whether they're down at, you know, Parkview Liquor Stores Market, anywhere you can find them, you just embrace them?
I glom onto them. I stalk them. I immediately get into their, drop into their DMs or slide into their DMs, as you might say. Now, I'm all about it, man. Yeah, no, so, but in all seriousness, like, everywhere you go, from bars to people, it's the Mets, it's the Yankees. Obviously, there's a lot more going on in the city of New York. Oh, by the way, the United Nations in New York this past week, you couldn't go anywhere. Biden, Zelensky, they were all in New York. Like, everybody, all the powers that be from around the world, the United Nations summit taking place in New York.
Zelensky play left?
I don't know if Ukraine's got a baseball team. He might have more important things to think about than what the Yankees
Not
and the Mets are doing these days.
I heard he can run.
He's a small guy, man. I think he hits from both sides.
He's got a good glove. Yeah. No, but yeah, the Mets are locked in right now, and that's something we don't have. It feels like everything about baseball right now in the Bay Area has just been either somber because the A's are leaving or the Giants have just been... Okay, it was funny to me, Dan, that the moment that the Giants got mathematically eliminated, they rattled off five straight.
Yeah.
They got back to 500. They've lost their last two games, but they won 7 of 10. This is going to end up being a season that is just forgotten because of how much, like, it's one thing to ride a roller coaster in the way that, say, like the Detroit Tigers have ridden a roller coaster. On, I think, August 10th, they had a 0.2% chance of making the postseason. So their season was dead, and then it was alive. And now it is alive and well because they punched their ticket to the postseason for the first time in 10 years. But the New York Giants have never been too high or too low. They've just been stuck at like two games below 500 for what feels like 6 months.
Well, let me ask you this. The way they just won five in a row, that came to an end. But the way they're playing, could this, in sort of a weird way, save Farhan's behind? Could they? Because I believe that they've yet to make a decision. And they're mulling that over right now. Could they be influenced incorrectly, by the way, in my estimation, by what's going on currently?
Well, that was a piece of news that came out during the week. And again, it's kind of been caught in the news cycle of the 49ers and their loss to the Rams and trying to get right for the Patriots this weekend. We got short skate out at practice yesterday for Brandon Ayuk that we could dig into. The Warriors are starting to ramp up to get ready for their season. And right in the thick of it was a piece of news that Farhan Zaidi does not know about his job security next season.
Sweat, buddy, sweat you get.
Well, but even if he does come back, it's going to be with a babysitter. I mean, I think it's going to be some situation where he still has the title, so he still is getting his contract, and it's through next season. But there's going to be someone there to hold his hand, and I don't know if it's going to be Posey. I don't know if it's going to be an outside consultant. I don't know if they bring back somebody from the old days. But it can't just be him. That I do feel confident. Whether he's here or not, it cannot be his operation. And Bob Melvin, who, by the way, also, I heard from a bird that he was at the Coliseum on Thursday for the final game, which was kind of cool. Not a lot of people, I think, around baseball were obviously involved unless they were on the two teams. But to see Bob Melvin with Marcus Semien, who also used to play for the A's, he was on the Rangers for that game. There's a lot of old and, well,
he's
new faces,
your hood,
too.
Right?
Marcus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in El Cerrito. Bob's from the peninsula, though. I think he's a...
No, I was referring to Marcus Semien.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Former Cal Bear shout-out.
Local boy. And so that was pretty cool. But I don't know if he knows about his job.
Oh, no. I think those two have to be a package deal. You can't get rid of Farhan and then whoever it is that you bring in inherit Bob Melvin. Unless he's a Bob Melvin guy. Like, those two have to be synced. Like, it never works at any level, especially in the NBA. If you keep your coach and bring in a new GM, those two have to be like Lynch and Shanahan. You look at any partnership that works, those two have to have some sort of a relationship prior to arriving. You can't just simply be the new head of baseball operations for the San Francisco Giants and say, okay, this is your manager. That relationship has to already be formed prior to that.
I think it's also because we know as much as we need to about those two people. We know what kind of manager Bob Melvin is. Whether you think he's good or bad, he has an identity about his style of play. And Farhan is an analytically driven front office member. It's like, I feel like I know who John Lynch is as an executive. I feel like I know who Kyle Shanahan is as a head coach. Maybe the jury's still out a little bit just because he's fresh for Mike Dunleavy in Golden State, but we know who Steve Kerr is. I don't know. Like, I think we know enough about the Giants' brain trust or the duo of Farhan and Melvin to make a choice. And so I think it's just kind of a matter of time and a waiting game. In fact, it could come down as soon as Monday when we're going to be out there at Media Day at Chase Center to cover the Warriors in the start of their training camp. So Farhan Zaidi might be fired this weekend.
Yeah, I think he's done. Because why would you wait this out? That's just my experience in this. If you're thinking about what it is that you're going to do, if you're going to bring him back, you don't make him go through this. You just basically say, okay, let's just end the speculation, give him the vote of confidence. If you're waiting to the end of the season, I would say 98.9% of the time, you're done. It's the only reason why you would wait. Otherwise, you would just say, we're going to bring him back, and you could make that announcement right now. There's no time sensitivity in terms of announcing right now that you're going to bring him back. There's no reason to wait until the end of the season to say we've made our decision. We're bringing Farhan Zaidi back. He's out the door, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think people usually do that with managers, but front office people, I don't think they really get fired this isn't mid-season, but before the end of the season. I mean, Kapler got let go right before, I think, the final series last year. But there was all that, again, there's been a lot of leaks of things and information and conflicting stories, and that's usually never good. I mean, you don't want to have to tell your side of the story and then hear someone else's side of the story about the job that you have or haven't done and all these swirling reports about who gets credit for signing Matt Chapman. If this was a stable organization, there'd be no need for any conversation about it.
I think, well, you know, just getting back to the players on the field really quick, I have to adjust sort of what I thought were my off-season plans as me being the general manager of the San Francisco Giants, because I thought we were two players away. Willie Adames, I think, is still very much. Willie Adames is going to be your shortstop.
I believe so, but are you off the Alonso wagon?
Yeah, I'm off of Pete Alonso because I've been reading about this Bryce Eldridge, who's apparently on a fast track.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that
he's a beast.
Well, I thought Alonso could be in a bridge for a year or two, but apparently that this kid could, I mean, I don't think you need that. I think this kid could crack the starting lineup maybe mid next year.
Now, are you getting Luciano'd here?
No.
Are you getting drawn into something that's promised and that will never be?
No.
Can he field?
No, not really. But you know who can field, who I do like, is this Grant McRae. Now, I know, he's your best center fielder. He's your best. Come on, you know the game. When you see him play, tracking a ball in the outfield, you could just tell that dude knows what's up. Like, he glides, he beats everyone. You can see, but he can't. His strikeout to walk ratio is ridiculous. It makes Joey Bart look like Rod Carew. I mean, it's out of control.
Joey Bart, by the way, had a respectable season in Pittsburgh the moment he left.
He's a mistake at this point.
Yeah, by letting him go?
No doubt.
Yeah, he can out-hit Patrick Bailey. Well, you can, I think. But I don't know, man. Like, right now, Bay Area baseball is just in a sad state. And that's why it's funny you bring up the New York side of things, because whether it's hot or humid or cold or windy, it feels like Ken's been walking around with his Mets jersey on. It feels like all week. I don't know. Have you taken it off yet? Or are you sleeping in this thing, Ken?
I mistakenly wore a Keith Hernandez jersey yesterday, and I'm really ashamed of myself.
Mistakenly?
Only because I'm the worst mush out of any Met fan. I mean, we lost yesterday 8-4. Wasn't a great thing, but yeah. We're very optimistic, but we try to be pessimistic, over the... out in the open. We're pessimistic out in the open, but inside, we're optimistic. So yesterday was my optimism, just kind of showing out to everybody. But yeah, I'm not wearing a Mets jersey right now.
Is Keith Hernandez your favorite Met?
No. Okay. No, I would say there's like three guys. I would say, I mean, Piazza's always going to be one of those guys, but Ventura and Joe McEwen. Joe McEwen.
Wow, that's sort of random.
Yeah.
Nolan Ryan, a big fan of Robin Ventura, too.
I want to say Keith Hernandez is a local product. I want to say East Bay. Or not East Bay, down to the peninsula.
That sounds right. Yeah. But the whole emotional approach to not mushing your team or postseason baseball in general, it feels like we've already gotten to that point for the Niners. Like, they're at 1-2, and people are talking bad about them because they're hoping that their season isn't over at this point. The amount of pessimistic Niner fans that I've run into, and look, there's reason to be concerned, there's reason to be worried, but the amount of pessimism surrounding a team that was in the Super Bowl last year, it really just goes to show, like, last year doesn't mean anything to a lot of people. And I can kind of understand why.
Last week doesn't mean anything to a lot of people. You could...
Well, last week should.
I'm just saying, theoretically, when it comes to football games, you could blow out, say you stamp the New England Patriots and then you lose your following game. No one's going to remember the New England game. Nobody remembers the Jet game. So it's just week to week. It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's funny because I was away, so I was catching up on Niner talk. And I could not believe, because there's a few sources that I go to here that I think are credible, and every single one of them was, this is the end of the world. It was impending doom that the 49ers are done. Suddenly their secondary is too slow. All these takes that people had glommed onto. And I'm like, whoa, are you kidding me? Let's just relax a little bit here.
And there could be legs to some of it, but I do think it's funny, and I definitely did this too, and we've done a lot of shows together where I was very high on this Niners defense, and it feels like they're the one, well, I guess they've lost Hargrave for the season now. He's done with a torn tricep, but that feels like the one part of their team that's been as whole and healthy as ever. It's the one phase of the game that they can't seem to correct.
You know, speaking of football really quick in New York, so the Giants were playing, and I was out there on Thursday Night Football. They have to stop doing that. That Thursday Night Football is just trash.
Oh, by the way, your boy cleaned up
Daniel
on
Jones?
Thursday.
Oh, no, you?
No. I took the bookie for everything. From the A's game, baiting just straight money line on the A's, three parlays in that game.
Well, so you came down to that final field goal that was missed.
Yes. Well,
the Cowboys, that I want to say, what's Aubrey? Brandon Aubrey,
yep,
the best kicker in the game today.
I was freaking out.
Shanked that field goal.
What?
Did Aubrey get a cut?
Did he get a cut? No, but I might be sending a bouquet of roses his way. But back up a little bit. So we're sitting there in the Coliseum, and it's like, all right, last game, we're throwing the house on the boys. There's no way the A's don't win this game, which they did. So that was one. Check. Brent Rooker, pretty much everybody that is worth their salt on the A's that has a bat and that can hit, hammer everything on the over total basis. So Rooker, Law Dog, Bladé, and also had an under on some of the Rangers. So Kumar Rocker, sorry buddy, got to fade you. Under on, I think it was wide Langford's total bases, who, by the way, dropped the fly ball in left field, shades of Josh Hamilton, was incredible. So we hit all these parlay legs, and then we're going out, we're just basically letting this thing ride because I don't want this day to end. I'm an emotional wreck as it is. So then I remember, oh, by the way, Thursday Night Football kicks off in 15 minutes as we're driving over the Golden Gate, or sorry, not the Golden Gate, the Bay Bridge, cooking up a three-legger with the Cowboys -4.5, which was also a sweater. Rico Dowdle, which was the final leg of this, over 42.5 yards. It came down to his final meaningless 5-yard carry to get us over, along with a Malik Nabers over on reception. So I took
you
the
took the
bank.
Over on Malik, right?
Wow,
oh, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the entire day, I still haven't been able to count my winnings, Dan.
Are you okay, young guy? Do we need a little intervention here, Ken? I'm afraid that he might be the only up-and-coming star broadcaster living out of a cardboard box.
You're talking to the wrong guy here. I'm a degenerate like him.
Well,
probably worse.
You. I mean, I'm
it's been an emotional week, Dan.
Is that the way we want to phrase it? Emotional? Okay.
You should talk to the other guys in the station. I think Evan's on the lighter side when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I got it. Oh, well, as far as gambling, yeah. I mean, I was drowning my sorrows, but
for Evan Jr., why he's like, well, Dad, why am I going to this community college? Well, son, we once had stuff put away for you to go to that Ivy Leaguer, but I had to hit that 2-team parlay. Or now, I had a good day at Bay Meadows, or so I thought.
That's not how degenerates frame it. What they would say is, well, did you know that this community college actually ranks in the top three as far as economics programs in all of junior college in the state of California? In fact, if you just slide and separate half of the state, you have actually one of the better chances to get into a UC. Like, you just start going down the line, oh, and here's where we can save a little bit of money, and that'll come back to you later, and then you just start, cooking on the side.
By the way, when I was coming up, City College used to be that school. I don't know if City College is a community college, junior college, however it is that you phrase it. But City College, I don't know, academically, yes, it's reputable. But I'm telling you, in terms of sports, that's where you would go to get to the Pac-10, the Pac-12. That's where you would go to get to the Big Ten in basketball, the Big East back in the day. That was the feeder school. That's where O.J. went.
Yeah.
O.J. didn't have the grades to get into USC and be what it is that he was.
California, especially Northern California, has a lot of really good junior college programs. Jesus. But I'm pretty sure Brandon and I,
a little phlegm this morning.
Yeah, shout out Dave. I think Brandon Ayuk was also a junior college player.
What, in Reno?
Sacramento, perhaps.
Okay, that's another good. I think they're all in that same league.
I know more about the junior college baseball track because that's also popular. It's one of the things where, and just real quick before you hit a break here, it's like you can get drafted out of high school in baseball, but if you go to a 4-year university, you have to play 3 years. But if you go to a JC, you can get drafted any of your years that you're there. So you have 2 years of eligibility. Maybe you take a red shirt, but you can get drafted whenever. So a lot of kids that either don't have the grades or that maybe need a little more development after high school but are highly touted prospects, they'll go to a JC and then just get scooped up right there.
Really quick before we hit that break, maybe we should I can do it right now, but how about the UNLV quarterback, where you now have the running Rebels get off to their first 3-0 start? Like, they're eyeing potentially going to the college playoffs this year, and he quits because of an NIL spat. He's like, dude, where's my $100K? I'm out the door. The UNLV quarterback quit because he's upset with his NIL deal that was promised to him, and they're off to a 3-0 start. Good job, running Rebs.
Contract negotiations.
And it's Vegas. You can't tell me there's a booster right down the block that can slide you $100K?
Well, no, because he probably bet it on the game. That's what I would have done.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, we are going to dig a bit deeper into, Shortsgate, whatever's been going on with the Niners. Speaking of Brandon Ayuk and his City College path, I don't know if he wore red or black shorts on that practice field, but apparently he could figure out the right color yesterday at practice. The Niners also have a game coming up in which they are the highest favored line of the week.
10.5 still?
Close to. And every single team that has been favored by the most first 3 weeks of the season has lost. Well, the Niners bucked that trend. Well, we'll figure it out all together on the other side on Saturdays with Evan Gittings and Dan DeBone on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Actually, you know, there was a Viagra commercial that I was listening to just before we went on
the air.
Where
your mind goes.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Where, this is where my mind is going, honestly, because I just read about this during the commercial break. Shout out to Billy Joe Armstrong, of course, lead singer of Green Day, East Bay guy. And I don't know if you caught this, but I think it was last weekend at Oracle. He did a concert. There was, some Pumpkins band, something like that. But Green Day was there. And during Billy Joe Armstrong's set, he basically just took a flamethrower to the Oakland A's. And then catching all the strays was the city of Las Vegas. I just read that they banned Green Day at two local rock stations in Las Vegas after he referred to it as the bleepiest city in the country.
Wow.
Yeah, shout out to Billy Joe. I mean, that's what punk rock's all about right there. Break the system.
You know what went viral out in New York was Larry Beal. Our local sportscaster here with KGO, Channel 7 in San Francisco, and apparently he went on this little editorial, and he...
I thought he held back, to be honest.
And he went after Fisher, and it's one of those things that they were talking about at WFAN, they were talking about it with a lot of the network and New York-based broadcasts. A lot of people were like, what happened to Larry Beal from ESPN? He's out here in San Francisco, and look at what it is that he did and had to say about Fish. I mean, it was everywhere. So congratulations to Larry. You know what the issue is with the Oakland A's when it comes to, obviously you were so emotional this past week, as was everybody. It's how do you prevent this from happening? In other words, how do we prevent the next Fisher from owning a baseball team? Like, how do you get these guys who are cheap, who do not care about the community, it's all about themselves? How does that become? And once you realize, like, that's what's in the water, is there any way to create a checks and balances to have an independent party to remove somebody like that? I know that the NBA got involved and got rid of Sterling, but that got to different proportions. I'm talking about when people just recognize you are bad for business, you're bad for sport, you're bad for our image, we're going to remove you. And I know that there's no way it could happen. The only way it could happen is if the dude sells the team. But that's where this begins and ends for me. Is like, how do you prevent the next Fisher from owning a baseball team and screwing a community like that of Oakland?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew what it took as far as, you know, kind of the vetting process for owners, because I think all owners have to okay someone that joins their ranks. But it's
Mark Cuban couldn't buy the Cubs back in the day.
Yeah, well, Joe Lacob couldn't buy the A's.
Yeah,
or other groups.
Well, they wouldn't sell to him.
True, but. Someone like, because there is another John Fisher in baseball. His name's Artie Moreno. I mean, the owner of the Los Angeles Angels is a scumbag. And while he has not opted to move the team, he has been kind of just chilling in the shadow of John Fisher. And I think we're going to start to learn just about all of his shortcomings in the near future once the A's are basically off the plate of Major League Baseball. But you're right. It takes a group of people to make this happen. And all of them are complicit in it. It's not just Fisher. It's not just Manfred. It's all of the owners, frankly, you know, including the owner of the Giants. It wasn't as if someone stepped to the table and put their foot down and said, this can't happen. Everyone basically felt like this was good for business, because the bottom line is that the amount of money that Major League Baseball is making continues to climb. But and so that's basically just why this has happened.
You know this better than I. What would you say in terms of put a percentage on it that they actually go to Las Vegas? There's not even shovels in the ground. They're not even close to starting anything out there in terms of building.
They've never started anything. I mean, they've started umpteen projects in the East Bay. There was the San Jose deal that got nixed by the Giants. They have never been able to put a shovel in the ground. So the fact that Sacramento... The only reason that they're playing in Sacramento is because they're already a ballpark built for them there. They didn't have to build one themselves. And what are the chances they move to Vegas? I don't know. To be honest, Dan, I really don't care. Like, yeah. You know, I'll still support the players because, I don't know, that's just the kind of guy that I am. Like, I don't know how fans really wrestle with their own individual fandom. Like, if they're completely done with the A's, you know, if they're never going to step in the Coliseum grounds again. If they're even going to like the game of baseball anymore, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of Niners fans, because I was talking to one yesterday. While it's not nearly the same situation, a lot of them are still pretty pissed that they play in Santa Clara, you know, that they moved out of the city of San Francisco.
I'm one of those.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Are you ever going to go to Levi's Stadium?
Probably not.
Wow.
Well, I don't leave the city unless I'm going to the airport, unless it's on fire. But, you know what's funny is out in New York... You know what the take is from another city, right? When you hear this sort of news from afar. And New Yorkers were like, you got the Giants, relax. You got the Giants are less than 10 miles away. And what they don't understand, you might be able to attest to this, and any of you A's fans out there, I know how you feel. You ain't going anywhere near the Giants. There's no way in hell you're all of a sudden saying, oh, I'll just throw on a Giants jersey, and let's go orange and black. No, it doesn't work that way. Your allegiance is going to be with the Oakland A's until you die. You don't just suddenly say, oh, okay, well, there's another professional baseball team. I guess maybe some. Can't speak for everybody. But that typically isn't the way it happens. You don't just simply say, okay, well, let's go Giants. The A's are gone. No, man, it's just like, the A's are done. Screw you, Giants. I'm just going to be bitter until I die.
That also aligns with, I feel, just a lot of baseball fans are, you know, kind of stuck in their ways and grounded in their teams and, well, sports fans in general. And 888-957-9570, if you want to get in on the conversation, you can open up the phone lines here on Saturdays on the game with Evan Giddings and Dan Devone. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't have anything against the Giants. I used to be one of those salty East Bay kids that, you know, wasn't happy when the Giants were winning World Series and stuff. But then when you actually watch them play, and this is where I guess I've learned to love baseball more than my affiliation with a specific group or team or even city to some standpoint. You know, when I started moving around the country, you get to know so many different fan bases and so many different people that you realize that we're all the same. Like, there's all different quirks. There's little, I don't know, things that make every single fan base special. And so that's what sucks, is that those things about A's fans are going away. And I don't know if they're necessarily transferable.
Let me ask you this, only because I know you have remarkable reverence for these sort of things, because it's well before, you know, any of us, any you specifically. But when you think about the Oakland A's, in its totality, since they came here, what is the most impressive? Because I break it down into three stages. Mm-hmm. That 72, 73, 74, Vida Blue, Catfish Hunter, Reggie Jackson.
Which, by the way, was the first Bay Area sports dynasty.
Three consecutive World Series. Or the run with the Bash Brothers, Jose Canseco, Mark McGuire, and those boys.
Yep.
Or the latest, which was Moneyball, mm-hmm. and obviously with Giambi and those guys. Like, which one... And try and be, because I know that you're obviously close to the latest, but if you were to look at this from the 30,000 feet above, what's the most impressive of all three of those runs, those dynastic runs by Oakland A's teams?
Well, it's obviously the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, I think the only other team in recent memory to three-peat is the New York Yankees. You know, so you're in that kind of dynastic conversation.
And I think you have to take into account that you didn't have, this was, I want to say, before free agency. So
absolutely,
if you had a good team, there's a good chance you're going to dominate for an extended period of team just simply because players didn't move around. You didn't have that latitude.
Well, but I think a lot of people also forget, just because the A's are associated with cheapskates now, they were one of the highest spending teams when they had the Maguires and the Canseco's and the Hendersons. Well, they had to be. I mean, Ricky infamous after, actually, Ricky had probably the best line from the Coliseum on Thursday, because, you know, they were asking him and Dave Stewart, and I think Shooty Babbitt might have been there. Bip Roberts was post game, and he was.
He's from Oakland.
Never played the show, but he's from Oakland. All these local legends, right? So someone walks up to Ricky Henderson and asks him, "Hey, Rick, you know, how are you dealing with this? Are you going to be okay? You know, is an emotional day for you?" And Ricky goes, "Yeah, I made plenty of money. I'm going to be fine."
That's so him.
That is like the most Ricky thing I've ever heard in my life. The only thing that he didn't do was refer to himself as Ricky when he said, "Ricky, gonna be all right."
Oh my! Wait, I got a good Ricky for you. So I was in Seattle, and the Mariners had just acquired John Olerud. This is way back in the day. This is just like my first year. John Olerud.
Love this story.
And he used to play with a helmet. And John Olerud, because he had a brain aneurysm at Washington State. And so he also had played, obviously, with the New York Mets, and Ricky was with the Mets briefly. And this is at the end, tail end of Ricky's career, where he went, I think he went to the Padres after the Mariners. And so he goes up to John Olerud, and he said, "Hey, what's up, man?" He's like, "You play," because John Olerud would play in the field with the helmet.
They played together in Toronto, right?
Was it Toronto? Yeah, it was Toronto.
Yeah.
You're right. And so he said, "Hey, man, you play in the field with a helmet?" He's like, "When I was in Toronto, I played with the first baseman, also had a helmet on." John Oliver goes, "Yeah, Ricky, that was me." He's a beautiful man.
And there, honestly, there's a lot of great books about some of those dynastic A's teams. The teams from the 80s.
I think Moneyball, to me, is the most impressive.
Well, yes, but the teams that had the most talent.
What it is that you said, that they had no money.
True. They kind of had to make do with and honestly, Sandy Alderson was the one that kind of started that pre-Billy Bean. But the teams in the 80s probably had the most talent of any of the great A's teams. They unfortunately fell short in a couple of,
Give me
88, names. They lost to the Dodgers. That was the famous Kirk Gibson walk-off.
Dave Stewart and those guys, yeah.
Dave Stewart, Bob Welch. I mean, obviously Dennis Eckersley, I think, won MVP. It was 91 or 92. Ricky came back in a trade in 89 because he wasn't there in 88. You obviously had the Bash brothers. Canseco's 88 season, I believe, was the first 40-40 season. And then, obviously, you have Maguire. So, I mean, those teams. But it wasn't just that. Like, I saw a Dave Henderson jersey out there. He was one of their fantastic center fielders.
Pride of Central Valley.
Yeah.
Dos Palos.
Hendu. I mean, those teams were stacked, and they lost to the Reds in 90. They got back to the ALCS in 91. But anyways, they had like a 4 or 5 year run there where they could have just cleaned up, but they only got the one World Series, of course, in the Babe Ruth series against the Giants. The Moneyball teams, they should not have been as good as they were.
Yep.
However, once you, like, if you go watch the movie or you read the book, it doesn't fully capture just how much talent they had on those teams. Like,
well, the movie doesn't even talk about their big three pitchers.
they had the Cy Young and the MVP on that team, and they're not mentioned whatsoever. In fact, the only moment, I believe, in which you really get a full highlight of Miguel Tejada is in the final game against the Royals, and he makes an error. And it's like, wow, are we really going to talk about, you know, the 2002 AL MVP, which, by the way, was at a time in... If it was more of a sabermetrically driven era, I think Alex Rodriguez probably wins MVP that season. But because of the money ball, the 20-game winner, Tejada had a few big moments, the walk-off against Guardado in Game 19. He had a lot of big moments that kind of drove his MVP candidacy home.
But how do you do Moneyball and not talk about Zito, Mulder, or Hudson? Or even mention them?
You're telling me. By the way, Billy Koch had...
I was so pissed at that movie.
Yeah. Although he was played by the great and late Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, I think
so
that
he
was
that.
Part of it. Anything like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, played by Capote. But, well, once again... Oh, if you go look at Billy Koch's numbers... He was, okay, first of all, he's one of the only closers that, what always I found hilarious is that he threw one pitch. It was a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. But Ramon Hernandez or Adam Melhuis or whoever was behind home plate would always throw down all these different combination of signs, and then they would just sit back there and he'd try and throw it past the batter. But he had, I want to say, close to 10 wins that season. If you're a closer and you have any wins, you're not doing your job. That means that you have either blown a save or you have been rocked to the point where I think he, I don't know, 40-something saves, but he had a lot of wins that year because he kept blowing games, and then the A's, in miraculous fashion, kept coming back and winning. I don't know. Oh, this is...
You know where it all stemmed from. Like, I'm sure the producer, whoever put together Moneyball, might have been a quasi-sports fan. I don't know who did that movie. But I'm sure what they recognized, or somebody blew in their ear, they said, hey, you know this Oakland A's team? They won 20 consecutive games. But that's not it. You want to know how they won their 20th consecutive game? This guy named Scott Hatterberg comes to the plate and goes yard, and they win it 12-11. Ooh, that sounds like a Hollywood drama. Because Scott Hatterberg got more play than Hudson Mulder, Zito, or Miguel Tejada.
Well, it was, of course, built on the book. Michael Lewis, by the way, who wrote that book, was also in the building on Thursday, from what I was told. But Aaron Sorkin was one of the writers for Moneyball. So it's, you know, it's more dramatic, it's more Hollywood, it's more glamorized, and it's about all these different weird kind of moments, really just surrounding Billy Beane and Brad Pitt. The fact that they had, like, an Oscar Award-nominated guy playing Billy Beane is one of the most random things I've ever heard of in my life. Like, okay, you just go down the list, Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm pretty sure Chris Pratt played Scott Hatterberg in that game, in that movie. The amount of star talent that they brought out for the, at the time, what I felt like was a team that was just seen as sort of lowly, really didn't make a lot of sense to me. But it's a great movie, and I'm glad they made it, because now I get to see the Coliseum every time.
Well, that was, to me, the one, I guess, but the thing is that they never really won anything as far as a, I don't even think they got, did they get to the LCS? No, they didn't.
They lost an ALDS to the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, so.
The David Ortiz-led Minnesota Twins.
That was, you know, I think that's the one thing when you think about comparing them to the 80s A's and certainly this early 70 Oakland A's. Those teams were marked by World Series championships. And albeit I'm with you, the 1980s, when you think about Canseco, McGuire in their prime, that the once World Series certainly wasn't enough. It's going to be sort of like that of the Los Angeles Dodgers 20 years from now. It's like, really? You just get that one series with all that talent? By the way, the Dodgers hanging on for dear life as we go down to the final weekend of the series to win the division.
Oh, yeah. Which I think also now marks 11 of 12 years they've won the division. The only team that hasn't, or that interrupted that streak, was
107-win San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, the 2021 San Francisco Giants. They have had a freaking monopoly on the NL West, and I don't know whether I don't know whether I respect it or not.
Well, you know what's going to happen? They're going to have their early exit out of the playoffs, and their pitching isn't going to be very good. So what they're going to do is they're just going to go out and they're going to say, Blake Snell, what do you want?
Well, the real question I have about this team is, how does Shohei Ohtani play in his first postseason? We've never seen him in the playoffs before.
That'll be fun.
We've never seen that guy hit in October.
And that's what part of the reason why he's there.
Yeah, exactly. Making $2 million. The rest of it's all deferred. It's an absolute joke.
But that's where Blake's going. The
Dodgers?
Rest assured, once again, the Dodgers are going to fall short, and there are going to be talk shows in L.A. just like this, and everybody's going to say, you got to go get pitching. Enough of the Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani's. We need pitching, and we need healthy pitchers. And they're just going to go, Blake Snell, come to daddy.
Come on down to the gas lamp.
That's right.
No. Further south.
The gas lamp. No, that's
Blake Snell,
part of the world.
Yeah, Blake Snell's going further south.
Oh, that's where you think he's going back to San Diego?
Oh, yeah. The Dads, the Friars, the Poppies.
Well, he's not coming back to San Francisco.
Yeah, that I was dead wrong about. I felt pretty confident that he would be around, and I feel very differently at this point. But 888-957-9570 is the number if you want to share any Coliseum stories, any memories. If you want to get in on the NFL Week 4 Action Talk, we'll be happy to take your calls. Again, Evan Innings, Dan DeVone, along with Jersey Ken and Cam Williams behind the glass here on 95.7 The Game. Let's talk to one of our favorites, Phil Mo Mike, out of San Francisco. Phil Mo, what's up?
Hey, what's poppin', man? Now, y'all having a good conversation, but nah. Owners like Fisher ain't cool. I was saying earlier this week, they need to take like lie detector tests, because the leagues would be super competitive if you had every owner that was just as competitive as, you know, some players. I ain't going to say all, but, you know, it's a disease of kind of like me that's going on within the world. But owners like Fisher, it's not cool because ultimately it's bad for baseball. When you have stuff like that, you got people talking about, man, I ain't never watched baseball again. So that ain't never been cool. And then also I want to talk about like stuff like that shouldn't even happen. Like, why is baseball allowing an owner like Fisher to even exist? And then San Francisco and the Niners, that ain't cool. Because honestly, you could kind of feel a difference. Santa Clara has a great vibe, I'm not going to lie. But San Francisco, they were in Hunter's Point. They were in Double Rock.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that automatically kind of puts you on edge. But then when you got your team scoring, you feel me, and doing your thing, you on edge. You hella happy. You hella jubilant. And then you got to go outside. You got to deal with making sure your car is good and all them dynamics and going down that, I think it's Gilman, and then having to go down, even if you're going to the South Bay or the East Bay. It was a lot. But you had so much joy within them. And, like, the quirks is what make a city or a stadium or an area lovable. You know what I'm saying? What goes on in Baltimore doesn't go on at Camden Yards, don't go on at Oracle Park.
Yeah.
Or what, you know what I'm saying? But Santa Clara has to, like, develop a vibe. And they kind of have. But I feel like the reason why the Niners do so good on the road, like, the fans travel, because that vibe at Santa Clara ain't really there.
No, I think that's well put.
Vibe in Santa Clara is like an oxymoron.
But it is funny, though, because people call the Niners, or Niners fans, like the wine and cheese crowd back in the 80s, right? I think Randy Cross said that about him. But he's right. And then you go on down to Candlestick, and you're like, huh, this neighborhood's a little tough. Not exactly wine and cheese outside.
No, not at all. But that was part of the character, man. And listen, Candlestick was fine for football, was it not? I mean, I can understand the baseball team wanting to get up and get out of there because the weather was just not conducive. It was ridiculous with the wind and the stadium and the upgrades. I guess Candlestick needed some upgrades for football. But, I mean, in terms of, you know, playing football games out there, as far as, you know, conditions, weather conditions, no issues with the old stick.
Well, I don't know a lot of the details around them leaving or the reasons why. Yeah, probably just money, to be honest. But
that's the bottom line in all this. It's greed, man. It's just greed.
Well, they're crap
everything.
Owners. A lot of the owners are not good human beings. Like, I can still remember when Cal McNair, who's the owner of the Houston Texans, referred to his players as inmates running the asylum.
Yeah.
I mean, DeAndre Hopkins said it made him feel like a slave again. So that he's still the owner of the Texans. Like, this happened 10 years ago. So it's not as if you just go around to each professional sports team and take a look at one and say, well, you know, he's got a pretty respectable owner. Like, we're lucky that Joe Lacob is as great as he is. That is the exception.
He's the outlier. You know, it's also what players will say that's very similar to that is Dallas. That Jerry Jones, it's like being on a plantation. It's like, that's his mentality. It's so outdated. He is just this sort of like that. Working or playing in Dallas, you just get that sentiment that you just laid out with, was it McNair? I mean, it's...
Oh, Bob McNair, sorry. It's son Cal.
Yeah, it is, you know, a lot of people feel that's what's going on with it. It's just, it's the nature of sports and sort of the corruption and anything that's gone wrong with the sport. It's the bottom line is that we have to recognize that money drives all of this. I was telling you that watching Thursday night football has to end before we got sidetracked with you and your betting difficulties or issues.
There was no difficulties on Thursday.
Well, then let's see what happens next Thursday when you're in the soup kitchen looking for, you know, your next meal.
You ever taken that that car service cruise? Yeah, that was me.
Just rolling up in the Jag, yeah, the headless Jag.
Just put it in O'Neill Cruz. I was rolling, baby.
So, now I forgot what the hell it was I was talking about.
Well, it's about time to take a break. So we'll find our train of thought on the other side. Keep story time rolling with Evan Giddings and Dan DeVoe up
Thursday
until
night
noon.
Football sucks.
I, for one, will combat that on the other side right here on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.